TheWellnessCouch.com, streaming wellness into your lives.
Welcome to the Primal Alternative Podcast, featuring actionable tips from real people with real stories about real food. This show is presented by Primal Health Coach Helen Marshall, who empowers other paleo-loving, Thermomix-owning mums to start a sustainable, fat-free business of their own with the Primalista license. The Primalista license brings primal alternatives to the foods we love to our communities, making primal living more doable with less falling off the wagon. The Primalista license is available at www.primalalternative.com. And now, introducing your host, Helen Marshall.
Welcome to the podcast. Today I'm joined by Heidi Hoskin, who is the creator of The Healthy Caterpillar. She coaches mums of sensitive children to guide them to eat the exact right foods for their bodies. Heidi's background is in speech pathology and health coaching, where she specializes in fussy eating, food sensitivities, and intuitive, clean eating. Heidi has two sensitive New Age boys herself and is passionate about empowering mums to create their own vibrant children. Welcome to the show, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Helen. It's lovely to be here. Hello to everyone listening.
I'm very excited to have you on the show today, Heidi, because when I first mentioned to my Facebook group that I was going to start a podcast, I said, what topics do you want me to cover? And it was an outstanding fussy eaters, how do I get my kids to eat this awesome food? So hopefully we're ticking a few boxes today and going to get some amazing actionable tips from you that, you know, the mums listening can take away. But just, I'd like to start off, Heidi, just by looking at how you came to this intuitive way of eating. Like, what was it, a specific event in your life that made you sort of reassess what you guys were eating?
Yes, Helen. So it started, basically, I probably can look back now and see all the health issues I had across my life, but it was only when I had my first son. He came out, wasn't sleeping, then he had the skin issues, then he had digestive issues, and then by two, he had the behavioural issues as well. And we got to a point where I just had to look into things because the doctors weren't really helping with the creams and steroids and stuff. So we ended up at a naturopath and they put my son onto gluten and dairy free. And so we went along with that and saw some great gains in his, in healing his whole body and system. It was amazing. But then, yeah, other little things would creep up. And so I ended up, only because he was so sensitive, getting him tested with kinesiology for foods before I'd put them in his mouth because he'd react with, you know, ADHD type behavior and it was just horrible. So we did so much food testing. And as we went along, it was like a little voice said to me, you know what, now this gluten-free bread's around, I actually don't feel like eating that bread either. And so then because we were doing all this food testing, I thought, oh, well, I might as well just see what I've got there too. And only because I had seen for my son how many intolerances he had, it made me believe when I got told, yeah, there was quite a few foods that I was intolerant to. Yeah, I went with that. So a bit of a slow unravel for us, I suppose, basically cutting out more foods, got rid of the gluten, the dairy. Next thing I've heard, oh, okay, sugar, might get rid of that. And as I went along, started to see just, yeah, such positive results. So we kind of unraveled ourselves just by doing the food testing until one day I said, wow, we've basically hit what you would call a paleo diet. It was quite interesting because we didn't really aim for that. But, yeah, the next thing we knew we were there, obviously the hard bit is, you know, my family's got between us all quite a few food intolerances, which cuts down a paleo diet probably again and again. So we do a few different things on the side, like some quinoa or some soaked black and red rice, occasionally brown rice. But in saying that, as we've gone along, I've started to notice when I'm making like a brown rice salad for the family, after I've had it, I'm like, oh, the grains don't sit as well as me just having the paleo diet. So I tend to drift back towards that. and from watching my son, who's gotten onto such a clean diet, I can now see he actually, without the sugar or any bad food in his life, he basically eats intuitively. He knows what he wants. And so it's made me, again, after seeing him, decide, no, I don't even want those sultanas in my lunchbox because I just didn't feel like them, and I want some kale chips instead. I've started to realize, wow, what do I actually feel like eating? And I started to realize the more I listened into my body, a bit like when you have a hangover and you just feel like some grotty processed food, I started to go, what do I actually feel like? And I'd be like, wow, I actually feel like something cooked. I'm not into the raw veggies. Or I actually feel like something like sweet and wet. And then I'd look around and go, oh, look, there's passion fruit. I'll have them, and realize that hit the nail on the head in lots of different ways. It was just the acidic food that I wanted to. And then sometimes I've gone, yeah, I'd come home from, you know, hot, sweaty yoga, and usually I'd have, you know, whatever food it was. But then I started realizing, hang on, I'm really thirsty, and melon is so good for hydrating. I guess I'll have lots of melon on those days. And yeah, just starting to tune right in. So that's how I've kind of gotten to the point of going, okay, whatever we eat, it's just got to feel right for our body. And across our family, you know, I've seen there are some differences in what we can and can't handle. My son and I are more sensitive, and I guess what you'd say a less than stronger constitution than my other son and my husband. So they can certainly handle a bit more. But I suppose the other thing that's been lucky for me is I studied to become a health coach. And in that study, they just had so many excellent new age topics around food. And that's where I started hearing about things like the intuitive eating, looking at our body, what it's craving, looking at bioindividuality, that we are all different. And, you know, like they feature something like the blood type diet, just to show that, yeah, different people can handle different things in different ways. So, yeah, it's made me go on this big food journey to basically look at myself as well as obviously my family. But, yeah, what really does work for me and what doesn't. Does that explain it enough, I hope, Helen?
It does, yes. That's awesome. And there's heaps of questions I want to ask you from what you've just told me. But what I'd first like to find out, Heidi, is about the kinesiology testing. How do they test for food allergies with kinesiology?
That is a good question. So basically it goes on our body's energetics. So for some people they go, oh, I'm not sure about this because I can't see it. But there is a feedback loop that goes around our body. So when we hold something to our body, it can either be strong or it can be weak. And so what the kinesiologist does, and I'll explain this with some words because you can't see me, is they pop a food up towards your tummy. And then they get you to raise your arm up at right angles at shoulder height. You put it out nice and straight. And they're going to use like a really minimal pressure, like, you know, 2-finger pressure, just to press down gently around, say, your forearm, and just to see if you can hold strong. So the premise is if your body is quite fine with that food, your energy will stay strong and there'll be a good feedback loop, which means that your muscles can stay locked. And so then you'll hold your arm out nice and straight and it will stay there and you go, yeah, of course I'm strong. But the next thing, they'll put a food in front of you that you are weaker to. When I want to get that feeling inside me, I think of something like having blue food coloring or something. Mm. And so then again, they'll push down on your arm and it's like, it's amazing because even the skeptics I've seen who are trying to hold their arm up, as long as you don't recruit extra muscles to help you, you really can't hold it up because that food interrupts the feedback loop from your body, which basically means your muscles can't stay locked. And so then, yeah, the next thing, depending how intolerant you are, you might just get a little shake or a little bit of weakness there. Or sometimes they can just push your arm all the way back down to your body. And so we did this quite a lot and it was great because, again, it can blur people's minds a bit. But I did it with a child I hold on to the child and we put the food on the child's tummy, and then the kinesiologist pushes down my straight arm so you don't have to rely on a child doing it. And it basically is like me holding on to them is holding on to their energy, and they test through that. But in saying that, I'm like, if you can fathom it, give it a go, because the mum or whoever's holding on to the child, you can feel the weakness in your arm. So there were particular things that we tested, and oh, the pain, like around my elbow area in there, it's sensitive. Just this real weakness, like someone's just shot you down. And that was when it was, yeah, some of the worst reactions behaviorally he'd had. And then I got this big, yeah, weakness in my arm when he pushed down. I was like, okay, yeah, that definitely confirms it. And then other times it'd just be a little bit of weakness. So we knew maybe that we can have it once or twice a week, but not often. So you can test things like that as well. But okay, we got to the point where we tested children's Panadol, we've done sunscreen. I even did my contacts because I was reacting. You know, there's so many different things you can test to see if your body is weak or strong to it. It's a really useful tool, yeah, if you get into it.
That's absolutely fascinating, Heidi. And the thing that I like about that is that, you know, it's easy to test on children, and it's non-invasive. So if you were, for example, wanting to run some, you know, IgG antibody tests, well, then you're going to need to draw lots of blood and send them off to a lab, and you're going to have eaten those foods, you know, for 2 weeks leading up to the blood test, which, you know, if you've already worked out you're gluten intolerant, you might not want to do. So I like I like this way of testing. I haven't heard of it before, and it really resonates with me. So would you say
that, that's great.
Would you say that the results of the kinesiology testing were accurate?
Yeah, like for us, it's been pretty much 100%. There's only, and the interesting learning curve through having done it is that our bodies change. So we would go, and occasionally when my children were really stressed, particularly you could see it with them, we would go in, and this is where I started realizing, me being intuitive, I'd take the right foods where I'm like, I think it's something between these five foods that's setting them off. And occasionally we'd even test, throw in a food that they're eating regularly and lots of, something like banana. And then one day he was not even strong to banana. And there's, you know, we don't get the reason why, but obviously there's theories like they were stressed at that time, so your body reacts more to food when it's stressed. They were eating a lot of it, so it could have been a quantity thing. But then other times, back to normal and it was fine again. So they're the ones that I guess people would argue and go, oh, really? Because you don't see the signs of a banana intolerance as such. Unfortunately, with intolerances, the signs are so subtle, you know, it can just be a bit of a brain fog that, you know, even us as adults don't even actually recognize is an intolerance. And, of course, the child doesn't know how to report that to go, oh, without those bananas, my head's so much clearer today. So you might not see, you know, the side effects of even taking it away, but the kinesiology does alert you, oh, you know, there's something going on there. So it's been quite great. And the other amazing thing that it's done for us is to see the difference between organic and non-organic, which, you know, you can't really test on a blood test. They just give you the printout. But, you know, something like almonds, my son would get an allergic reaction all over his face with, and so you'd assume he had an allergy. And it was only that my other friend was doing kinesiology testing with her children, and she said, but mine are fine with organic almonds, why don't you try that? And so we got them tested and they were fine, and they've always been fine. And then years later, my son happened to eat some non-organic almonds, and bang, there was the rash again. And you just go, okay, is it the chemicals?
Yeah.
And other people are saying their children are allergic to the food, but maybe it's actually the chemicals that they're reacting to instead. So it's really great tool to get in there and just get it done. And you can go back and do it again.
Yeah, and that's great to see, you know, how, you know, maybe after a period of time you're not going to be as sensitive to certain food, and so that's great that you can keep going back and testing it. So just to go a little bit further back in time, before you did the kinesiology testing, what kind of ways was your family's eating intolerances, sorry, food intolerances, how are they presenting? I mean, you said a little bit about your son's ADHD, but could you tell us a little bit more about, you know, and you mentioned a rash. What are the sort of ways was it presenting in your family?
Yeah, good question. Well, for my first son, he's the most sensitive, and obviously, unfortunately, he spent the longest eating the wrong foods compared with my other son. But yeah, I mean, the sleep, even that, like he was 7 months and we ended up at sleep school because he just couldn't sleep. And yeah, once we got his food, the sleep school kind of helped, but it didn't really. And once we sorted out his food, you could just see he could lie down in bed and drop off to sleep as opposed to thrashing around. He used to look like he was in a washing machine, even watching TV, just ran around on the couch. And yeah, we kind of, you don't really think anything of it when you don't know your child is any different. But yeah, once we've seen, oh, we've cleaned out his diet and he sits there, you know, completely still watching TV, you go, oh, wow. That's, yeah, the foods that do that. When he's slipped up, he goes straight back to it to prove us that, yeah, it's definitely there. And so then, yeah, I mean, the behavioural one was a massive one. It was probably about 2.5. I said to my husband, because I work as a speech pathologist with child development, so I kind of had my ears out and went, he almost could get an ADHD diagnosis, but I knew he was still young, so I kind of left it. But, yeah, he couldn't sit down and play for longer than probably 5 minutes at a time. And he was very bright though, so he'd go around and rip up books, pull the washing down, do all this other stuff, but he wouldn't actually sit down and play. And it was only once we'd done the gluten-free and dairy-free trial, it was 6 weeks into it, all of a sudden he just sat there and played for half an hour straight talking to himself, and we were like, wow, has he just grown up? And we didn't even pair it to the diet because it'd been 6 weeks. And then we gave him some birthday cake not long after that just as a test, and bang, he went straight back to all the naughty stuff and couldn't sit straight to, yeah, do any playing. So I guess you can see how, yeah, it just plays around with their brain and what they can do. And why I'm, yeah, so big on getting our children eating the right food so that their brains can do the right things, and you can see their amazing potential underneath.
I know, it is, and it makes my heart absolutely break, you know, for the kids who are, you know, diagnosed or misdiagnosed with ADHD, or they're, you know, like, you know, sent to sleep school, or, you know, a lot of things, yeah, which can be quite traumatic on the kid and the family when you're trying to implement, yeah, those sorts of things, when really all it is that they're something they've eaten. I mean, you know, I have a similar story with my daughter, and, you know, she used to just cry and whinge, and her cheeks were bright red all the time. And I was like, oh, for, yeah, God's sake, give me a break, you know. And when, yeah, I look back at the little pictures that, you know, pop up on Facebook, I can see, I can see it's glaringly obvious gluten intolerance, you know, right, yeah, in my face. But, yeah, you know, back then they were just, you know, they were just a pain to deal with, you know. That's like, right, what the hell, you know. And so, yeah, you know, it's yeah, it's amazing, and I'm so glad, and I'm so glad for your beautiful children that, you know, you've taken the food, you know, cleaning their food up and helping them, and, you know, helping their bodies heal themselves. It's just, oh, it gives me shivers. It's so empowering and exciting. Yeah, it's really, really
good. Yeah, thanks, Ellen. It is. And as I say to my son, well, thank you for reacting so badly that I had to listen, because I can see, unfortunately, a lot of mums don't really see what their child could look like. It's, you know, like the subtle redness at the top of their cheeks, or the subtle darkness around their eyes, or even a couple of red spots on their face. To me, I just go, oh, something's not right, or, you know, a bit of eczema. But for a mum that doesn't know any different, you almost grow up thinking that is your child. I look back at my son and go, we never realised how poorly he looked at the time. I knew there was things wrong, but looking back, his hair was sparse. He had, yeah, the redness around his face. He was pale. It was puffy. Yeah, it's just amazing. And, you know, just recently I wrote a post on, you know, what would your vibrant child look like, just to try and get mums thinking about, yeah, how would you change to being different? And, you know, even with myself, I can see I'm looking so much more vibrant than I used to, you know, probably 10 years ago. Once you see photos of yourself, it's almost a bit scary.
I know, it is. It's amazing, isn't it? So, wow.
Yeah.
And it kind of,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's, and I don't know about how it goes for your family. I think it probably would, but it's a kind of gradual increase. You know, you don't sort of, you know, you just keep feeling better and looking better, and
yeah,
things start just being, you know, on a general increase, which is, yeah, which is awesome. So let's talk a little bit more now about specifics. So before you changed the diet, you know, you got rid of the gluten, got rid of the dairy, got rid of the sugar. would you say your diet was like a standard Australian diet with pasta and bread and that kind of thing?
Yeah, pretty much. Like the thing I always remember, even with my son, I said I had him on wholemeal bread, I had him on plain like Greek yogurt. So he was having a pretty good standard Australian diet. Mm. But the things that like I thought it was all healthy, but I didn't realize like the things that had preservatives, like, you know, cottage cheese and whatnot. So yeah, I mean, there was still stuff like that, and, you know, sugar. I'd bake with sugar and didn't even think that was weird. So yeah, it's just so different to what we do now. So yeah, pretty much it was probably on the healthier end of the standard Australian diet. We didn't do lots of processed foods and, you know, soft drink and sugar like that. But yeah, it certainly is a world away from how we eat now.
I know. And it's amazing because I was the same, you know, baking with the sugar and the no frills white flour from the supermarket, thinking, well, it's just.
Yeah.
It's just flour and sugar and butter. I mean, like, it's as old as the hills. How can it be bad for us? And I'm making it myself in my Thermomix, you know? You know, we did the best with what we had at that moment in time. And then now we know better, we do better. Yeah. So
that's fine.
So how did you go, like, you know, switching out Weet-Bix for, you know, a paleo breakfast? And how was that a slow progression? And were you met? Sorry, there's three questions in this one question. But were you met with a lot of resistance?
Are you meaning for my children?
Well, from your family in general, because even getting hubby on board can sometimes be problematic.
Journey. Well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, we started off with just my son. I think I might have been pregnant with my second when we did it, so it was just him. And yeah, like, it wasn't fun because he was two, and we did a gluten and dairy free trial virtually overnight because I'm not one that does things in halves, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So, and I wouldn't recommend it to anyone because it's so stressful trying to say to a 2-year old who doesn't understand you can't have that anymore, and trying to do a full on swap. I guess the thing that I did was go to something that he would like, that was, you know, a different option. So, I mean, we went straight to rice bubbles. How funny is that? Just go on to rice bubbles. That was where I was at to begin with. Go, okay, right, gluten-free. Until we realised down the track that someone said, oh, you know, there's still traces of gluten in the rice bubbles anyway. So, so that's what I did. I mean, he wasn't having sugar or anything on Weet-Bix then, so that was fine. And then I think, I'm trying to remember. I'm pretty sure he was okay. We went, I'm pretty sure it was over to rice milk, because we'd actually seen a dietitian before this who'd tried to put us on like an elimination diet. And it was, a big nasty elimination diet. I think we had about 8 foods in the mix that my son could eat. It was all white foods. It was, just ridiculous. So we were kind of put onto the rice milk and all the rice products from that. So we kind of just went along with that. So, I mean, it's traveled so far that, I mean, thank goodness, you know, as you go along, your children are growing too. So they get more and more wise, and you talk about it more, and they get used to the changes and whatnot. So it probably went, I'm trying to think what it did go to, but I mean, I knew eventually we wanted to get him onto better foods, and we, you know, had a massive breakthrough the day my husband came home and said, do you think we should try this green smoothie recipe? Because he probably wasn't that on board by then either. And it happened to be something that my son got into as well. It had lots of cinnamon in it to hide the green. And so since then we've, you know, done lots of different smoothies to keep things going. And we've tried other different options just for variety, just to get them in. But I guess in saying that, I've probably stretched my children's fussiness with other foods first, like lunches and dinners, and then they've gotten used to being stretched, that when I've gone, oh, here's this new like a carda, I'm not sure if your listeners know, you know, coconut, apple, date and almonds ground up in the Thermomix.
Oh yes, like a dessert, the ADA, like a, I call that
almost. Oh yes, the ADA, yeah, there you go. Yeah, so something like that, you know, he was okay with. Eventually we've done, different granolas and whatnot, and, just tried to make things, yummy enough for them to try new breakfasts. So, we've branched on, like, there's no tomorrow from the Weet-Bix.
Yeah, from the beige food that the dietitian, oh, that makes me cross.
Yeah.
Holy moly. And was it with, so they switched you on to rice bubbles and rice milk. Was it, did they switch you on to any soy? I wonder.
No, only okay. because I think looking at my son, she went, he could be reacting to that, that and that. So, yeah, it was basically all rice, all pear. And then there was a couple of other, something like green beans, I'm trying to think, and then a bit of lamb. And, yeah, that was about it. It just didn't sit with me. And then lots of baking with gluten-free flour and whatnot just to fill him up. I was like, what? So, and Nuttalex, so that was one I remembered. So,
oh, yes, Nuttalex.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Oh, dear. Oh, we've got to laugh.
Yeah, my poor son. Yeah, it went from inflammation to inflammation again with that diet. So, yeah, we didn't go back to that and, yeah, moved on. So thank goodness.
And that's where my next question is coming at. And I have to laugh because, you know, we did exactly the same. So we went from Weet-Bix to gluten-free Weet-Bix. And made with sorghum. And, you know, and that was fine. But that was a good idea to transition, you know, and that was
great. That's right.
3 or 4 years ago, and it was the easiest thing I could do because everything else, it was so overwhelming, like, to start with when you make that transition. But now every morning we're tucking into sausages or bacon and vegetables and sauerkraut and that's the norm now. But it's delicious. What a great way to start the day. It's like, you know,
that's exactly right. Now
my breakfast of old was 40 grams, because I used to weigh out, right? 40 grams of all bran because I was constipated, with some toned milk because, you know, I wanted to lose weight, so that was low fat, with sugar on.
Yeah, there you go.
And I was starving by 9 o'clock, so you got to look back and I was who are you?
Yes.
But anyway.
Yes, I know. Still, we can laugh about it.
I know. We can laugh now, but it wasn't funny at the time.
No, that's when you realise how different it is from what the standard Australian people eat, when we are actually laughing about how different it is. Such a change.
So how did you make that amazing realisation that actually these, you know, white foods, as you called it, or like these foods that the dietitian had recommended, how did you make that transition to, well, actually, I'd rather feed him real food, you know, plants and animals? How did you do that? That's amazing.
Yeah, good question, Helen. I'm actually thinking that through now. I'm going, luckily I had a bit of intuition intact as we went through this journey, because I wasn't really aware of what I was doing, but something in my gut just told me these white foods are no good. I have no idea how I knew, because I didn't know a lot at the time, but it was super stressful as well. Unfortunately, it was the exact time when it was my son's birthday. He had his party. There were so many events we went to, and we had to work around this diet. And something just told me there's got to be an easier way. And so I think we just left the dietitian and just went, oh, we're just going to fumble along. And then luckily, I'm just trying to think, someone spoke up about it. I went to a naturopath, and even then we went, okay, that's great, but I still felt like there was more than just the gluten, the dairy. And then someone spoke up to me about a kinesiologist and what they could do, and I went, what a relief. That sounds like the answer for us. And it was such a relief for them to go, you don't need to cut out all those foods. Of course your child can eat half those foods. We just got to find the ones that he can't eat. And I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. And it was such a relief compared to this diet that was, basically created fear in us, and so much stress, that my son was probably taking on so much stress and then reacting to the foods anyway, so particularly when they're so young. So, thank goodness, we moved on from that and, kind of launched out into the right way.
That's great. So it was really the kinesiology that, you know, well, you following your intuition and your inner guide telling you that, you know, this isn't sustainable, you know, even if the dietitian says it's right. And then to find that amazing kinesiologist who was able to tap into each one of your family members' individuality and work out, you know, what's going to be the best foods to make each of you thrive. Yeah, that's amazing, really amazing.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, it is funny because I think, like, before that I'd heard about paleo and some little voice in my head went, that sounds interesting, that could make sense, and I never thought about it again. And, yeah, I just think, isn't it interesting, we actually just went and food tested ourselves and then ended up basically where, yeah, a paleo diet is just by going, okay, we can't have that, we can't do this.
Paleo by
PBR, so.
Paleo by default.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. That's,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, that reminds me of that at the time when I was in my major health crisis and I was looking into this bowl of organic buckwheat cereal that I was eating. And yeah, I said to my husband, I said, they say food is medicine, but, you know, and I'm eating superfoods, apparently, you know,
yeah.
Buckwheat doesn't really work for me. And I feel terrible. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's that, you know, it's just that finding that journey, isn't it, as to which foods are your medicine, you know, not necessarily.
That's exactly. And that's where I think, you know, just listening to your own self in so many different ways. Like, you know, we go to a professional, I see so many people go, food issues for my child, I'll go to the dietitian because that's what you do. And I'm like, oh, but.
No.
And yeah, just to keep questioning everything, even when you see the professionals, because otherwise you can end up on a completely different track if you don't keep on your intuition that something could be different, something could be wrong, because yeah, there definitely can be things to pay attention to.
Absolutely, absolutely. So just on a practical level, and this might sound slightly nosy, but I'm absolutely obsessed with what other people eat. I'm always encouraging encouraging people in my Facebook groups to, you know, take pictures of what they're eating and hashtag it plate perv, because we all like to see what other people are eating.
Yeah,
you know, it's obviously working for you and your family, and it's great inspiration. You know, and also it's a little bit nosy, which is exciting. So, could you give us an idea of how your daily meals look in your family?
Yeah, for sure. So, like I said before, I mean, most of the time we do a smoothie for breakfast, but, you know, I've always been mindful my boys are growing, so we almost top them up with, you know, it could be leftover meat, so they have a chicken snack either in the car or before they've left, or, you know, even some nuts on the way, an apple on the way as well. So we're kind of doing, yeah, smoothie and a bit more, maybe a boiled egg even. And then for lunch, I mean, for me, I really enjoy just eating veggies and a bit of protein at lunch, plenty of greens. So most of the time I basically just keep cooking extra veggies as I go in the night. So I've always got something left over, but at worst I just throw sweet potatoes. I prick them and throw them in the oven and roast them for a good hour. And then that's me done, you know, that's a staple for my lunches. So then I just throw in some greens, any extra veggies that I've got in the fridge. It might be some meat, some egg, nuts, seeds, trying to think what else. Sometimes tahini, we have homemade mayonnaise on top. For the boys, this is our unperfect part that I've even written a blog post about my unperfect paleo.
Mention that, actually. Yeah, I love it. I was going to say, let's get people to look at that, because I love that. Not, you know, there's no such thing as perfection. You know, I love that. It's a wonderful blog.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So carry on.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's cool, Helen. Yeah, and I'm happy to say it, because I found so many parents overwhelmed trying to get their children onto paleo, and they're so stressed and they've got fussy kids too, so it's not like they're even doing an easy transition. I'm like, hang on, we could do this in small steps. So like I always say to people, like, we've made this transition over years. It's not in a month, it's not in a week, it's not even in 1 year. We're still, you know, going along, unraveling what we have been eating. And unfortunately, when my little ones were younger, they were having sandwiches and we moved them onto the gluten-free bread, and it really just proves how strong in our mind we can become attached to food. And my children's attachment to a sandwich is quite large. They don't love not having a sandwich. I tried making paleo bread and they didn't love the bread, but they did actually have it. But it was actually at a point where I was making so much food, trying to do everything from scratch, you know, all the fermented stuff and homemade spreads and everything. And as well as working, it was so much stress. And I didn't know it at the time until I got to a point where I'm like, I've got to let something go because this is crazy. Mm. And yeah, in the end, I kind of put everything up and went, okay, what can go, what can't, what am I prepared to? And I just went, you know what? We've gotten to a point where they are really quite, you'd say, vibrant. They don't get sick at all. And they have that sandwich every day. When they had been having it, I'm like, I'm going to go back to that and I'm going to make sure I'm doing everything else that I want to, because there's some things that are non-negotiable, you know, like homemade mayonnaise. I won't go and buy that at the shops. So in the end, I've gone, okay, let's do that. We have done an anti-candida diet and parasite clean and everything. So at least I know that that processed bread isn't feeding so many bugs like it used to be, because that would probably be more concerning for me. Yeah, and so the day I let that go, I'm like, okay, this is much better. It's also made sure that they're not hungry, because sometimes if I didn't have the homemade paleo bread, we'd try and put other things in, and they eat so much food and we would border on hunger. And unfortunately for my eldest son, if his blood sugar dips down, he goes into can't think straight mode and gets into all sorts of trouble. So again, I always say to the mums, you've got to weigh up where you're at as well. If children are hungry, there's nothing worse, you know, for their health and development as well. So, yeah, so they have that. But then they also have greens every day, green veggies every day in their lunchbox. They have a good staple of sweet potato chips. They have some protein of some description, maybe a treat, like a bliss ball or something here and there. Some carob kibble is awesome because it's not even sugary. It's just the carob broken up. What else? I'm just trying to think. But, yeah, and then some fruit, and they always take a banana as well to top them up. So that kind of gets us through lunch. And then afternoon tea, you know, plenty more fruit. I mean, my husband is awesome at making jerky, so they'll, you know, they might have some of that. What else do they have? They're pretty good even at just having some veggie sticks with you know, we make things like homemade pesto. And then dinner. This is where it gets tricky for us, because when the more you do listen to your body, and my son is really strong now, I can see when he's being fussy and when he's being intuitively, I can't do that. For example, he doesn't do cabbage well, so the rest of us would have fried cabbage, say, with stir fry on top and some protein, meat or some egg or cashews. What else? Tonight we're doing butter chicken. Yeah, and like cauliflower rice is great, but of course my son can't do it. So then you go, okay, what else? So we do a lot of roasting of sweet potatoes. We've gotten into one day the boys got into wrapping their food with lettuce leaves. So I'm happy to do that. And we just make sure there's plenty of veggies in with the meat as well, and the filling veggies like sweet potato, just to make sure they've gotten filled up. And then, yeah, and then I make our own homemade chocolate. So they get a little chocolate after dinner as their bit of a treat, and that's pretty much the day done.
And how old are your boys, Heidi?
Question. They've just turned 5 and 7, so we've kind of just gotten to the point where you can talk to them and you can reason with them a bit more than the early years when it's much trickier.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for giving us all that information, because there's heaps of, you know, really good ideas for, you know, lunches and snacks. And so I really hope that you know, some of our listeners are going to take some inspiration from that and have some, you know, it's fair enough saying, you know, eat paleo, but I think there sometimes can be a little bit of decision fatigue in terms of how to implement it. And I love what you told us about how you were making everything and you actually realized you were quite stressed out. And when you let some of those things go, it made this way of eating more doable and sustainable for you and your family. And I think that's great, because I think when some people come to a paleo lifestyle, they think they've got to make broth, they think they've got to, you know, do the fermenting themselves, got to come up with an amazing paleo recipe, they've got to turn out, you know it's dinner's got to look like something out of a celebrity chef's cookbook, you know. It doesn't have to be that hard. And I think when you realize that you can let things go, and you know, for example, in our life, we have to have fermented vegetables, like that's a non-negotiable. But from that one time that I made it in the wardrobe and it exploded and I had beetroot through all of my clothes, I decided that was not my zone of genius. And I just I'm just going to buy that from an amazing woman in town who makes it. And, you know, and that's nice supporting another local producer and, you know, it all adds to it. But I think there can be the planning side of it. It can be not an excuse, but like a way that some mums can sabotage their success, you know, and fall off the wagon because, like, this is too hard. We can't keep this up. So I think that the advice that you gave there was awesome. Now, what I want to just get into now is you've talked a lot about being intuitive and asking yourself, what do I want? Could you go into a little bit more about that, like, as in terms of how you actually get, does your body talk to you? Like, how do you do that? And what would the difference be between being fussy and being intuitive?
Yeah, good question, Helen. It's been an interesting experiment, I suppose, for me, because I've done the same things that my boys have gone through. So I've felt and, you know, gone through it all as well. And I swear it was the day when we decided to cut all the chemicals out of our life. We just, and obviously all the other foods too, but you lift the brain fog and then the next thing you start realizing your intuition. And as I say, like, I didn't even realize it was there when I had the brain fog, and all of a sudden I said, I'm not sure I should go back to that dietitian. As I say to lots of mums, it's about just stopping and choosing to listen to your gut, because, as you know, they say, mum knows best, and no one will know your child like you do. But also, your intuition is there. It's just whether you stop and pay attention. In saying that, I can see why a lot of people go, I have no idea what I want. And I'm like, it's a slow unravel, I suppose, getting rid of the foods that are aggravating you, especially your brain, and even the chemicals, and living more of a natural life. And then you start to be much clearer again on, hang on, what's this? And for me, that's where I was saying, like, before, I can only I liken it to having a hangover and you go, what do I feel like? And you're on those days when you feel so disgusting, or even when you're pregnant and you've got those cravings, and you listen to them and you go, I really feel like, you know, whatever it is, KFC. And so you go out and you go and get it, because you're tuning into your body and what it's trying to tell you. It might have been saying, hey, I need something salty, I need some good fats, and not the KFC, but it was telling you something. And that's where I've been interested to watch, to go, well, we can only allow our children to eat intuitively if we can put only the good food in front of them, because of course they'll pick processed or sugared foods if they've got their, you know, if they've got that in front of them. So once we get them used to only eating whole foods, and then, and again, even respecting food sensitivities, then, like, that's when I got with my son and went, okay, well, I can trust things now. What would you like? And I'd say, here's a boiled egg. And he's like, I just don't want a boiled egg. And well, I'm like, are you not hungry? He's like, no, I don't want a boiled egg. Only occasionally that I'd be in those same scenarios going, yeah, I was offering a boiled egg, and even I don't feel like a boiled egg right now. It made me go, well, what do you want? And he would go, I want kale chips. And I'm like, okay, how can I argue with that? You know, that's a great choice as well. And he'd sit and smash a bowl of them, and I'm sure he's doing his own liver detox. He just doesn't know it. But, so it's been really interesting. And then the day that he literally brought home a clean lunchbox with the 5 sultanas I stuck in the middle, I don't know why, because I thought he obviously needed a treat. And I said, why didn't you eat the sultanas? And he just said, I didn't want them. And he walks off. And I've gone, oh, wow, I put that in there because I thought I had to put in a treat to the lunchbox. And he looked at them and went, I don't want those, as opposed to most kids would just eat it up. So it's, I mean, he's a good example of, you know, someone who's eating intuitively by himself. He's teaching me how to do it, whereas my other son, would go and finish, you know, whatever is in front of him if he likes it. But in saying that, the same thing with my younger son, I still say, well, what do you feel like for afternoon tea? Because I know there are times when I need fats, when I'm super hungry, I need something to satiate me. And, you know, my mum used to say, have a raw carrot. And I'm like, I don't want a raw carrot. And then they'd say, oh, you're not hungry then. It really is listening to what is your body needing. In summer, you just go, yeah, you can see the kids, they probably need some fruit because my kids eat very low, you know, sweetness, not even sugar, but fructose. So, yeah, I go, okay, eat the fruit if that's what you want. And then having known that there was a study where they had little ones, I can't remember the age, I wish I knew. I'm pretty sure like they were fairly young, like about 12 months old, and they gave them a smorgasbord of food in front of them and they allowed them to eat whatever they'd like. And the children would eat and gorge on, you know, one particular food that they liked, but they would get to a point and then they would stop and then they'd turn onto something else. And it was like their body knew when they'd had enough. So with that in mind, I've always kind of gone with a bit of trust too, particularly if my boys are into something particular, that they're doing it for a reason. And since then I've studied it on myself, and like when my adrenals aren't so great, I can all of a sudden I'm just loving salty food. And the licorice tea I have just tastes delightful. And of course licorice is so good for adrenals. Yes. And then the day my adrenals are fine, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I could take or leave this tea, and that's my body saying I've had enough, don't really need it. So my next issue, I guess, is then just as I cook for the family, is not to put what my body needs onto them. Like my husband will say, oh, we've had so much of, you know, like this cabbage, and I've realized it's because my body is craving the cabbage. I'm cooking it up lots. But for him, he doesn't really need it. So, yeah, and it, again, though, like it's been quite interesting that my husband has come along with it. You know, he just says, I just don't need the red meat, and he is eating intuitively. He only wants chicken, and interestingly, his blood type is different to my son's and my blood type. So I do go, oh, I wonder what that is, but it's made me hold my mind open that, yeah, his body might need different foods, so we need to go with that too.
Yeah, and that's amazing. Yeah. And I nearly just went, back it up. Your husband does not want red meat. Like
right.
Every man likes red meat.
Yeah.
Don't they?
Yes. And it makes you sit up and go, hang on, what? And it's a bit like when my son wanted the kale chips, you go, oh, you couldn't be making this up. You wouldn't do that if you were, yeah, trying to play a game. So there must be something in this. But yeah, and again, it's been the slow unraveling of getting rid of all the sugar and the wrong foods that all of a sudden, like even for my husband, it was a jaw-dropping moment for me too when he's gone, I just don't feel like that meat. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
But I can see him naturally. He doesn't probably realize it as much. Yeah, he's just intuitively saying that doesn't sit with me. So that's that.
That's amazing. What is your thought, Heidi, on getting your kids to finish their plate of food?
That's an interesting question, Helen. Yeah, so this is where I say to parents, like the whole, where does intuition break down? Because our children are born so intuitively, and I've seen and heard so many reports of children who are really, or babies who are very fussy right at the beginning when the solids were introduced, and then later they found, you know, when they've had food testing done, they are intolerant or allergic to those foods. And so you realize if only we could pay attention to the little young ones and what they're telling us, because generally they're not fussy, they're actually possibly intolerant to those foods, and it's just hard for us to fathom, and we might not want to. So as we go along, though, of course, we get to that point where it's the old, I guess, belief systems that you must finish your plate that starts to come in, and we override the children when they say, I don't want this, and you go, oh, you must finish your plate, or even you must finish eating that particular food, and they say, I don't want to. And so then the intuition is kind of squashed. Mm-hmm. The child goes, okay, and we get trained out of listening to our body going, you know, I've had enough, or I actually don't really feel like that food. Mummy, you're cooking for your, you know, food preferences, not me. All of that. So, yeah, it's an interesting one that I kind of just pay attention when my children aren't finishing their plate to go, have you had enough food in the day? Is there something in that meal that you didn't like or it didn't agree with? And I typically will ask them, and yeah, it's interesting to hear their responses. You know, my son, he'll catch me. I go, you put tomato in that tonight? I'm like, I did. I thought you'd be okay with it, but he doesn't do tomato well. And I'm like, yep, fair call. Don't finish it then, because you're listening to your body. So
yeah, wow.
That's probably the answer.
That's the answer. So in terms of, like, you know, you're saying that, you know, generally most mums would plan, you know, generalization, but mums would be the ones who'd be saying, right, tonight we're having buzzed chicken, tomorrow we're having leftover roast with leftover vegetables. So how do you cook for your family's preferences? Do they get involved in the meal planning, or do you, yeah, how do you cater for everyone?
Good question, Helen. It's been interesting because we were at a point where I had it fairly good, especially when we started the paleo, and I thought I had myself, you know, in a good routine of making sure we've always got food cooked. And that's when we started intuitively eating, like all of us, a bit more. And so that's when it has become a little bit more tricky, because now obviously I'm trying to keep up with all the nice cooked food, but also going, okay, right. And when my son's just like, I just can't do that tomato in the bolognese anymore, I'm like, oh, really? Mm. So I've just tried to find ways around it. And initially we just didn't have bolognese. Like, I might have done a fried mince with spices or something different in tahini. But then I've gone, hang on, all the rest of us are having less tomato, and I actually started craving tomato. And I've gone, okay, we can't do this either. So in the end, thank goodness, you know, we're all pretty flexible, and particularly my son, who's quite intolerant, but he's quite happy with simple meals. So for example, I'm cooking a butter chicken tonight, and we had some fried chicken left over from last night. So he's having fried chicken and some basically steamed veggies that I'll steam on top of the butter chicken on the Thermomix. And he's happy with that. So he kind of has that to the side. Sometimes I'll do different things. Like, some of us like the kelp noodles, others don't. So I'll just go, okay, the kelp noodles are super easy because they're virtually already done. So that's one thing that's easy to serve up. And then I might make like a cauliflower rice or something else on the side for the others. So I'm not doing double cooking of side dishes and stuff. I kind of just try to pair it that way. And then the other thing that I've gotten into is also doing like a batch of one thing, and then having freezer bits so that that person that needs that, I can get that out for them the next time while I cook something else for the rest of the family, if that makes sense, on that night. So just, yeah, trying to be smart and cooking once and eating twice. But also, I guess we do a lot of just separated meals, like, you know, here's the meat part, there's the salad bits, here's the lettuce to wrap it in, you know, pick what you need. And I find all the deconstructed meals can be a bit easier sometimes than trying to, cater for people.
I find
it's a bit trickier in winter.
But I do find that, just having the things separately. And my first child, Sam, he's 10 this year. But he doesn't like things all mixed together. So, like, for example, if we'll have a coleslaw, we all, Millie and Mike and I love that, but he'll just have deconstructed coleslaw. So he'll have a little bit of carrot, he'll have a little bit of apple, and, he's not into cabbage, so no cabbage for him. You know, it's
there you go.
Doesn't have to be overly difficult, you know, you just break it down and keep it simple. So
that's right. I think it's simple because I work with so many mums who like to cook from recipes, and it's very hard for them to break away from cooking with a recipe. I'm like, you just keep it really simple, and it makes it less effort for you, but it's also quicker. You get more family time instead, all this stuff, rather than trying to overdo it and then going, oh my gosh, I'm so upset my child won't eat the meal that I've spent all this time It's kind of a double whammy.
I get absolutely, I can totally relate to that, because I get absolutely stressed out if I'm doing a recipe and, you know, you've got to read it and wear stuff out. There's people coming and talking to you, Mom, can I watch the telly? Mom, can I have something to eat? Mom. And you're like, and it's so stressful. And the pressure on your shoulders of, oh God, are they going to eat this? I'm not into recipes at all. I like to keep it really super simple. And what I find is that when you're buying local seasonal spray-free veggies, and when you're getting grass-fed meat, from the local butchers, like, the taste is outstanding. Like, you don't need to put, sauce.
Right.
You know, it's amazing. Just a bit of coconut oil, a bit of salt, chicken drumsticks, and it's just heaven. Eat the skin. Delicious.
Exactly. That's for sure.
Put all that love.
So yeah, simple things.
Simple.
But yeah, it's good.
So let's talk about the Healthy Caterpillar. I am very impressed that you have taken your learning and your health coaching skills and all of the work that you do with children as well and transformed it into a way to empower other families to teach their children to eat intuitively and how to deal with fussy eaters, because it is a real problem. Like if you can't get your kids to eat, I see it a lot with my clients too. So how did that business come about?
Good question, Helen. So, it initially began, with my son. Obviously, I was seeing all the reactions that he was having with the food, and then I saw him on his clean eating. I was like, oh, wow. And then I'd go to my speech pathology job and see all the children who couldn't sit still on the chair. They couldn't pay attention. Their parents were saying, could you get them? We need to get them playing longer, using more language. And I was just like, but that's my son. They're eating the wrong foods. There's nothing that I can do that's going to make them sit at the table better than changing the foods that they're eating from the ground up. So at the same time, as a speech pathologist, I was working with fussy eaters. It's a kind of a role that most people don't know that we can do. And so I was doing fussy eater therapy, helping children get them onto different foods. And the big training that I'd done was all about get them onto any food, whatever, just get them onto new textures and things. So they'd recommend cheesels and day-old licorice and sour lollies. It was just, shivering, I guess, to think about it. So
just dropped there. Like, what?
Yeah, it's quite amazing. This is a big international training that I think they've since kind of, or that they do have a part now on food intolerances, but it just made me go, hang on, these children that I'm working with are super sensitive. They've got all the childhood health issues going on, let alone learning delays and disabilities as well. And then we're teaching them to eat all these wrong foods, and that just didn't sit with me. And so I decided, everyone was saying to me after all my research for my own family, oh, you should do nutrition. And I just knew I didn't want to get into anything around the dietitian world because of our experience with white foods. And I wasn't even sure about nutrition. So I decided just to study some health coaching. And it was a great course that was recommended to me with real new age stuff. And so, once I did that, then I just knew, okay, this is it. I have to show other families how they can help their children get them onto the right foods and use my fussy eating experience to help them to do that. And the sad thing was, at my speech pathology job, it was me working with the child, and I could get them to do, eat all these crazy foods, but then we'd send them home and of course they'd go back to, mum didn't know what to do. There was 1,000 other factors going on at home that we weren't helping them with. So that's why decided, okay, I need to coach the mum to do it. And we talk about every last factor that's going on so that they can get success that way. And of course I recognize everyone's at a different stage with where their fussy eater is beginning. Some are still, unfortunately, stuck on the carbs or the processed food. Some are, already quite a way into eating veggies, but they've got such a restricted diet. So I basically pick up wherever the mum's at and coach them on from there to get them moving along. And then the mums start to see, oh, okay, we've worked on this fussy eating around this particular food. Do you think they can't do it? And I'm like, yeah, that's the intuitive eating part coming in too. So that's how we start looking at that, and whether we, eliminate certain foods as a trial, or they go get food testing done as well. The more sensitive children I see, you can virtually guarantee they'll have food intolerances of some description. So, yeah, it's kind of an interplay with it all together to move the children along.
Right, yeah, fantastic. And I know that I've read on your website some of the testimonials from the mums that have worked with you and how you've really transformed meal times in their household. So if people are listening to this podcast and they're thinking, I really need to have some Heidi in my life, what are the different ways that we can work with you?
Yeah, good question, Helen. So obviously you can come along and, you know, look at my Facebook page, and I have a Facebook group that's called Creating Vibrant Children, which is a bit more interactive and getting mums together and supporting each other, because I didn't have that when I went through all of this. I could cry. I was so lonely. So I really want to bring mums together. And then from there I have got a four-week online program that's basically, 4 weeks coaching mums or all the basics on fussy eating, but it's basically a program that I'm launching over and over again. So it kind of is a lifetime access thing to sit in each round as it comes along. So the next one's on May. And then I've got my learning studio, which is basically where that sits, and then all my other programs, which I'm still trying to put some more in there, as well as webinars that I've done and other free learnings that mums can do. And then I should say in a few weeks I'm going to start a three-week dairy-free adventure. So that's going to be another little thing that someone I know many mums want to get dairy out of their children's life but don't know how. So that's going to be another little adventure to go on with me. So I'm kind of just trying to get lots of different services up and running. And then, of course, I've got my six-month coaching program. That's where I coach the mums one-to-one for 6 months, because that's generally how long it takes to really get the snowball going, to unravel, any of the foods that the kids can't eat and get them eating all the right stuff for their bodies.
And do you have a link to your website that you can tell us what that is now? Obviously, I'm going to put all of the links to your Facebook page, your group, your online program, learning studio, all of that in the show notes. But is there a website address that you can give us now, Heidi?
Yeah, thanks, Helen. So it's thehealthycaterpillar.com. If you want to go there, you'll find lots of information on there. And obviously there's links even there to go to the learning studio and whatnot as well.
And your Facebook group, tell us the name of that again. I think I'm going to go and join that one now.
Yeah. cool. It's called Creating Vibrant Children. Brilliant. And I can't recommend it enough because of all the wonderful mums that are in there. There's some fantastic mums that are doing amazing things. And basically every mum that's coming in there is going, I'm taking a stand for my child's health in one way or the other. So, yeah, it's a great group to be in too.
That's wonderful. Now, just to finish on, Heidi, thank you so much for your time today. But before you go, do you have a piece of advice or a couple of tips that you could leave our listeners with if they're dealing with, you know, like fussy kids? What would your first, you know, starting point be? If it's at all possible to give a generalized advice.
It is. I'd say the first thing, and obviously I've done a webinar and a workshop around it, is understand your sensitive child. There's been so many mums have gone, oh, if only I knew, you know, how sensitive they were and how big this is for them to eat particular foods. I'd change everything, and they become more understanding of their child. So even just getting on your child's page with that, and also then keeping mealtimes calm. That's my number one step. And then I basically say, and from here on in, as you work with fussy eaters, you always keep it calm, because as soon as the adrenaline comes into the mix, appetite is gone. The research has shown that. It's you're basically shooting yourself in the foot if you're trying to do anything when it's not calm. Go on from there, I suppose. So that's where, like in my four-week program, we do all the basics of fussy eating. It kind of takes that long to get the ball rolling just with the basic stuff, only because there's just so many factors for different people and where the children are at. Mm-hmm. But it basically shows how we can then desensitize our children to different foods by doing food exploration with them. So that's probably the main tips. And my other big tip for the mums is to keep it simple. You know, lots of mums are trying to do big fancy recipes, or they're trying to cut out too many foods at once, and they just get so stressed. And I'm like, and then it brings the stress to the table, and it goes around this cycle together. So see it as even a year goal. What would I like to achieve in a year? And you go, oh yeah, I could probably do that. But we don't really realize, a lot of us mums are like, I want it done now, or I want it done yesterday, or I want this to be all changed in a month. And so it feels like it's overwhelming and it's not going anywhere when we don't get success, you know, with our kids and when we serve this food. But I just want them to think, well, yeah, if I did this in a year, got a bit of help, a bit of support, even with other mums that are going through this, yeah, it can definitely happen. I want you to think that it can happen too.
So understanding your child, keeping it simple and committing to baby steps, really, just one step at a
time.
That's
exactly it.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I did say I was
steady wins the
battle. It does. Now, yeah. I did say I was going to let you go, but you have just mentioned a table, you know, bringing food to the table. Are you an advocate of the family sitting around the table to eat dinner? And I promise this is the last question, but I think I'm going to have to get you back on the podcast in a few months' time because I could talk to you for another 3 hours. But the table, do you think that's an important part of getting kids to eat the food you want them to eat?
Yes, it's an interesting question because I always say, like, monkey see, monkey do. So, of course, if the child's seeing you eat, you've got a good chance they're going to give it a try. Like, you've got the little ones that'll eat off their mum's plate only because they obviously go, well, whatever you're having, that's the right food, and they'll eat off their mum's plate. So you go, that's awesome. And it also is time. With any of the fussy eating coaching that I do, I need the mum, typically the mum, to sit there and do the food exploration with the child to play with it and look at it and get used to it. So you do need to be somewhat at the table with your child. But in saying that, it sounds a bit crazy, but when we're kind of getting the sensory system used to different foods, there's a point where these children who are right into details and they want to pick out the bits of their food, they need some distraction. So depending on where they're at, and you know, like I work with really fussy eaters that are eating, you know, 5 foods. Sometimes we even put on an iPad, or you know, if they already are watching the TV, I say keep that on. We're going to introduce the food that there is kind of new while they're not so with it and get them used to it, so that at least we know they're trying it. And then we can always back away from the TV. We start to talk about, well, what family games can we play at the table, you know, a bit of I Spy or something that's still distraction, but it's actually interaction, and getting the child there with the food. So, yeah, typically, of course, I would say definitely sit at the family table together. But again, I've got so many mums where their husband's working late and they just say it's just not appropriate. I can't get, you know, myself and everything there at the time. So, yeah, again, it becomes one of those things, depending on the factors going on in the family, we kind of discuss what's the goal, and what's the best answer around that goal, rather than saying, well, you need to do this, and then they have shame because they can't get to it.
Yes, shame and guilt. And I think that's what makes your approach the most appealing, Heidi, is that you're meeting mums where they're at, and you're willing to, you know, you've got the basic goal of where you're heading, and it's just to get there in whichever way is going to suit that family and the food that's going to suit that family too. And I think that's wonderful. So thank you so much for the amazing work that you're doing.
Thanks, Helen.
More people like you in the world. And thank you so much for being a guest on the Primal Alternative podcast today.
Thank you very much for having me. And, yeah, I honour all the listeners that are listening in with interest. That's wonderful also. So thank you, Helen.
Thank you, Heidi.
This has been a production of TheWellnessCouch.com. Check us out on Facebook and join in the conversation on Facebook.com/TheWellnessCouch. Subscribe to each show on iTunes and check us out on Twitter. The Wellness Couch, streaming wellness into your lives.
Whilst the Wellness Couch presenter endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.